Welcome to the eGovernance Academy podcast to discover the future of governance. Tune in for the Digital Government podcast every Wednesday.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Digital Government podcast with your usual host, Federico Plantera, also saying, first of all, Happy New Year and welcoming you to another year of the Digital Government podcast, where this time we're going to look exactly at how things will be looking like in Europe in terms of digital development and transformation, at least, let's say, for the next 5-6 years. And we're going to do that with Raido Lember, who is the former CEO of the National Investment Promotion Agency and at the moment consulting businesses. And Raido, I'm very, very happy to welcome you to the podcast.
Federico, hello to you and hello to everyone. And Happy New Year, first of all. I'm pleased to be here. Thank you. Fire away. We'll have a good conversation about digitization and economy, citizen related stuff, and looking forward to it.
And exactly, we're going to cover many of these dimensions because all of them, first of all, make part of what is a digital Europe strategy, let's say 2030, which you will also like introduce us a little more into. But at the same time, the strategy, let's say, for getting a digital powerhouse, so the report says, at least the one that we've been looking at in order to prepare for this episode and that we're going to talk about, includes exactly dimensions that regard developing the digital single market, data rules, support for businesses. So, Raido, who better than you to join us today to explore these topics? And I would start exactly from a more maybe like a business-oriented type of question, which is exactly one about the digital single market. The digital single market in Europe has been obviously like a topic in its foundational phases, let's say, when the different countries and the member states were setting up everything. But at the same time, at the moment, what does the EU approach consist of in terms of renewing, let's say, this commitment to creating an actual single market in digital terms? And exactly like a unified environment that is also easier to navigate and utilize for companies.
Well, all in all, the last year, November 7th, was the release of this document, or let's say a plan for 2030, which leaves us 6 years. Yeah. So that is more or less a white paper of actions that should be taken to raise the European Union competitiveness and digital society standards for any citizen that is living or interacting with European Union member states. So all in all, there is an action plan sort of for 20 main activities, 20 directions, divided in 5 pillars, that is concentrated on gradually developing European Union market and living space for the citizens as a best place to live, and for also the citizens as best place to do business, to get your ideas out there and get them to the wider world as well. So it expands the European Union borders as well, in order to take down the boundaries of taking your ideas to a wider world. So there's many aspects. So they focus on 5 key pillars that are a digital European society, a competitive Europe, a sustainable and healthy Europe, a resilient, secure and innovative digital Europe, and a global Europe. So those are the 5 pillars. And they're mainly focused on increasing the freedom, the standardization, progressiveness, and more diverse and more competitiveness in all those areas.
So exactly, since you mentioned the topic of competitiveness, which is obviously inherently connected to market and developing a digital single market, one thing that I think is worth doing in this session that we're having is to take a little bit more, maybe like a citizen or SME business, let's say, type of approach, in the sense that, for example, if we were, or if you were actually, to look at how to foster technological innovation and competitiveness in Europe in the next years, either as a consumer or a business owner, let's say, what kind of technological innovations would you like to see more of in Europe? And in a way, how do you think that these can, at the same time, do the thing that you were just talking about, which is enhancing Europe's position and positioning in the global tech landscape?
Well, the technology covers a variety of space. So we're talking about software, we're talking about hardware, and we're talking about both in vertically integrated in our everyday lives, everything from agriculture all the way to social networks. So it's a very wide space, but all in all, the main idea is that we would have educated and skilled people to understand the digital space. So the education part and the knowledge capacity building in that is highly in focus, so that people would actually understand the opportunities that the cyberspace offers in all verticals, in all industries, in their everyday lives, and what impact the digitization in different aspects of life can have. So with those skills and knowledge, they can bring new ideas to the world, not just in Europe as a single market, but actually to the wider world. So the skill sets and the knowledge base is one of the ground bricks, or kind of a foundations of that. And going on from there is how to enable SMEs and even micro businesses to actually kickstart a development of a business model or a business platform to take this idea out of their little pool or pond to the wider Europe. So we have, you know, many member states that are still culturally quite different, and there's still so many borders and barriers that kind of are restricting or kind of holding people back of entering to wider markets. So many of the solutions and great ideas are still remaining hidden in their own little ponds or in their own member states in European Union, and do not get access to wider markets. And so there's great ideas and solutions that could make our everyday lives better for as a citizen or whatever aspect wise, there's just still hidden there. And so we want to enable for everyone to come out with those ideas and excel and prosper and make the world a better place, essentially. So taking the barriers down by standardization of different transactions, whatever it would be, similar like trade agreements, there are exchange of data agreements, and there are standardization of various procedures that are so fragmented at the moment, still in not just within EU, but also, you know, could be with Africa's, could be with America's, or further down the road to different continents and areas. So there's so much standardization, and we call them barriers, and that we could develop and smooth and do so much work at that that will take down those barriers to enter those ideas to wider markets.
Okay. From what you just said, I already gathered, let's say, about three elements that it's worth that is worth discussing more. But before getting into these three elements, one thing that I would like to say and that I would like to point out is that also in this episode, we are saying something that the listeners of the Digital Government Podcast definitely have already heard, let's say, in a few of the past episodes, and it's exactly how. From when it comes to talking about digital development, technology only covers, let's say, a certain part, while at the same time, instead, probably the focus for the next 5-6 years will be exactly on the three elements that you have just mentioned. One, data. Second, support for small businesses, and third, the development of digital skills. So people, businesses, and data. Next, obviously, to the hard tech, let's say, element that obviously in digital development, it is present. But if we were instead to look at these three elements that I've mentioned, I will start from probably the one of building the digital skills and also digital careers. So in that sense, no, how can Europe better develop and retain tech talent, let's say, according to the strategy? And what should be the focus, let's say, of initiatives that, as you said, for example, are aimed at creating education systems or like extra classes, extra curricular activities that would ensure somehow that the skilled future workforce of Europe increases in numbers and also depths of knowledge. What should happen there?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it's about demonstrating how much you can do in cyberspace or digitalization or in IT. So it's to motivate young people to choose the learning path and career path in those streams where this digitalization can be harnessed. So it's about small kids and directing them or showing them the opportunities in a very young age. So this is, you know, a hobby classes, something they can do after school, a robotics classes after the school, for example. So if you look at Estonia, for example, where I come from, we have those robotics classes for many, many years already in the very early stages of life. Even next to the second grade classes, you can choose robotics classes. And that's why we are harnessing this space so much as well, because we get young people being very motivated to choose that career path, and they're highly, highly enthusiastic when you get those ideas into their minds at the early stage, and it sticks to them, and they really take this as a fantastic world where to be for the next decades to come. But how we can do it in Europe, in other areas as well? As we know, there's a lot of mathematics and a lot of technical knowledge that you need to learn and retain to actually be successful in this space. And so the STEM, or you know, science, technology, and economic maths, and all this comes into play. And it's not an easy path to, you know, progress all the way to the top and really change the world. So you need to be focused, and therefore the motivation and getting more people to choose that path is a challenge. So we're trying to tackle that in this strategy and for the Europe 2030 for the next 6 years is to popularize the space more. And for example, if you look at the robotics classes in Estonia, for example, there is only one girl per 10 people in the class. So there's like 9 boys and 1 girl. So again, how we can get more female into this space as well. We haven't harnessed that potential enough, and I think the stigmas that we have from the past of kind of women roles and men roles, this needs to be broken down as well. So this is just a couple of examples of how we trying to tackle this and get more people into technology and understand the technology, the possibilities of how you can actually self-actualize. And you can change the big things with choosing that path of a career. And so there's so many other aspects to it, all the way to popularizing and the business streams and for the small and micro businesses, everything from digitalizing the industries of the existing business lines, but how you can actually make the world more efficient with these digital tools and the IT technology frameworks. So, getting more businesses to divert their business model towards digitization and also making new products and services in the digital space is another nudging that needs to be done in a more wider scale in Europe.
We'll get to that nudging in a moment, in a second, but something that I wanted to highlight from what you just said is exactly how, when we talk, like, also, how to say, the point of developing digital skills and digital careers in Europe, as actually also in many other places, if not everywhere else, also comes through a certain topic of awareness and access, let's say, to these programs. What do I mean with this? That obviously people and from a very young age need to be aware of the potential of using digital tools, not just, in everyday life when we, I don't know, make a reservation at the restaurant or when we browse through social media, but also to see how, in any case, digital tools more at large could serve even exactly one's individual career and path in the labor market. And I am saying this as someone who, in any case, comes from political science and humanities. So, I mean, even I am saying that. But, and also, I mean, I would say that there are many people in this space, also in Estonia, who do not come from tech careers, but have found ways to approach, let's say, the tech topic, the technology topic. And at the same time, contribute to expand it and talk about it and disseminate information about it. Because the second aspect, the one of access that comes from awareness, as I was saying, is inherently connected to also the topic of inequalities, no? That we were mentioning. Not all people consider this career, not all people consider technology, let's say, to have a certain role in their life that could go beyond the simple usage of devices that they do on a daily basis. And this is reflected obviously by the disparity as well that we have in the labor market, as you mentioned, in terms of labor market participation between men and women, for example, in this sector. But the other aspect that you mentioned in the end then of your answer was exactly the how to say, more business oriented exactly, and more entrepreneurship based. And as a consequence, what I would ask you is, if you run a small business, let's say, no, like an SME, what kind of digital support or resources, for example, do you think that would help you the most in adapting to increasingly technological markets, let's say, meaning how can digital transformation benefit SMEs and local businesses?
So the variety of tool sets that is available there, only choose and apply. But there's also budgetary constraints you need to be aware of. So therefore, every member state in the European Union is at their own stage of digital development. So there's let's say there's two sides of digital development in terms of businesses. So one is you're in a conventional business, brick and mortar business. So your opportunity in the digital space is more focused maybe on digitizing your existing brick and mortar business. So how to make your processes more efficient by using digital tools, how maybe improve your offering to your clients by adding digital tools there. And the other side of the business stream is what are the totally new business models in digital space that you can build from ground up as digital by default. So, you offer digital services or products, or you're digitizing your existing physical products or services with these tools of IT. So, on both sides, and every country is at a different stage of development, and then that's what determines what tools you should maybe harness at that particular development stage. So, if the digitization of your, for example, manufacturing industry is at a low level, of course, the wise thing would be to do is to kickstart a wave of digitization grants. So that could consist of assessment procedure of this particular manufacturing plant, And there's a short period of kind of assessment and review, and that analyzes what can be digitized here and what is the most optimal path to this digitization. And the second layer of this government support could be a direct grant to subsidize the investment into this digitization. So these can be the two stage, and those two stages can be offered in certain country for example, 3 or 4 years. So you're now kind of getting this digitization of manufacturing industry into the heads of your industry leaders and the executives and the overall manufacturing kind of industry work pool. So you do that for 4 years. You incentivize, you help them to understand that these are the opportunities to increase your business competitive edge by digitization, and you incentivize both the analysis part but also the direct investment into this digitization process. So if you do that, for example, I don't know, 4 years, you already brought this kind of momentum into this manufacturing industry, and perhaps the other industry leaders that didn't use the grants have still recognized the importance of it by just assessing and hearing the stories from those existing users of these grants. And they will now do it by themselves, maybe without the grant, but you've now injected the momentum into the digitization of brick and mortar businesses. And you can do this then in different industries. You can go to a tourism industry, same thing, how we can digitize the business models, assessment, and then direct investment on top of that. And you can do it again for a couple of years, and now you have actually planted a seed that starts spreading itself. So that's one space you can do with existing like a brick and mortar style businesses. And the other, of course, side of it is a complete innovation focused, which is how we can bring out more digital, fully digital business models, how we can bring innovation, very deep tech or scientific focused solutions in cyberspace. So it's initiating and embracing and kind of bringing out ideas from the society to this IT innovation. So this is, you have a selection of variety of incentives. Everything from just financing ecosystems, so there will be more players in academia, society, and the government to work together to understand what are the challenges in the world in hand, and how to incentivize the cooperation between different stakeholders, that they would actually put their heads together, brainstorm, and work together, and add each other's strengths to actually formalize the innovative solution. And so you can innovate, you can incentivize the ecosystems. And then on top of that, you can incentivize each individual entrepreneur or founder or already established company by just making grants for small, tiny, maybe even 5, maybe 50,000, maybe 150,000 grants, just to call up new ideas. Government is willing to share the risk with the innovator, with the founder or SME or micro business, to actually invest into an innovative solution. And so the government covers part of the cost, and the individual or company covers part of the cost, and they both try to make something new or something better in this digital space as a solution, a service, or actual product. And then you can grow up to different levels of company development. You can finance like really large R&Ds for existing SMEs or even large businesses. So you have different stages of and sizes of those grants that can be harnessed and injected. And again, it is all about what is the level of this development in certain country, and then this country central government can then choose of which development phases may be not progressive enough, or where they choose to select their focus to get even better than they are today.
Yeah, something that I would say comes up from this is exactly, it's also connected to the topic of education that we were addressing before, because I am understanding that technology, exactly, or the digital economy, it's not that much a matter of sector. It's a matter of approach. So like if technology becomes an approach, and then there are also like governments and institutions actually at large, including exactly the European ones, that somehow push, let's say, nudge, as the term that you said before, nudge innovation and the adoption of this sort of like technology as an approach type of mindset. So thinking, okay, I'm in a traditional industry, or okay, I'm studying humanities, but at the same time, technology is part of society. It means that you don't necessarily need to go and study STEM subjects, let's say, or you don't necessarily need to go and and create like a tech startup to make technology more in a more effective way and also in a better business way, let's say. You don't need that to make it part of your life or part of your activities. So technology becomes an approach, because at the same time, it means recognizing that technology and this type of approach can be a multiplier, let's say, of adoption, or even just of this way of thinking in a way. Raido, I have a couple other questions. One that I would like to go through in a relatively quickly way is one on data, simply because when we talk about data on this podcast, we already did it, for example, with Heiko Weinsalu, one of our experts, Ehrlich, another one of our experts. But at the same time, you know, we talk about data policy and data rules sometimes are a bit, you know, hard to navigate, let's say. So one thing that I would ask you is actually simply in general terms, that given the importance of data in a digital economy, what is the type of balance, let's say, that when the EU and governments draft rules and regulations, let's say, in terms of usage of data, what are the key steps that the European Union in that sense should do to streamline, let's say, these data rules? What is the balance that needs to be struck, let's say? What are the elements that we need to keep in mind when we think of data rules across countries should be streamlined and made easier, let's say?
So, you know, European Union is kind of old, but the cyberspace is relatively new in society if you take it a long view. So the standardization is really globally in the early steps. Like really early steps, and the European is showing the way in the world. So if you look at, for example, the GDPR probably is most widely known standardization, and it's handling the data of private individuals and so forth. So this is one of the maybe success cases of the implementation in a European wide level. But if you look at the individual industries or streams and so forth, you look at healthcare or you look at energy sector or something like this, you have massive gaps there. So these are the silos that are massively just blocking the harmonization and kind of efficiency of the world and efficiency of European member states to work with each other. So all in all, we want a better life on this planet and better life for each individual of us as a citizen. To enable that, we need to harmonize the flow of operations, whatever it is, exchanging healthcare data, exchanging cross-border energy system information, or whatever it is that influences our everyday life. And so we have this GDPR, for example, so there is this personal data sharing and protection and common understanding and rules that is being finalized as adoption wise, but there's so many barriers and so many silos not being tackled, again, personal healthcare and so forth, that we are looking to harness this space now with this 6-year strategy as well to take down these silos in those other sectors and areas of life. So I think the most traditional, easy to understand is the healthcare data. Again, if I travel around the world and so forth, and I have an incident or some kind of healthcare challenge, then to get your healthcare records and to get those safely across the border for a doctor overseas to or across the border to have a look at them, how we actually organize this. Is there a standardization in place? How we can have a fast, let's say, healthcare service for you, taking account all your past personal healthcare data as well. So how we can solve that this case of, let's say, a healthcare emergency you might have on travels can be resolved as quickly as possible. So there's a lot of like information exchange standardization that still needs to be solved in Europe, but in the rest of the world as well. So this is just a very like a very down-to-earth example of that we should tackle, and this applies to so many different areas of life, between citizen and government, between citizen and business-to-business relations. So there's so much out there that silos are still out they're waiting to be resolved.
Yeah, and down-to-earth examples are what we are all about on this podcast. But Raido, I would ask you actually one thing now, sort of like as the last question to wrap up the episode. In checking the Digital Europe Report 2030, which listeners would also be able to find in the podcast blog connected to this episode, and also download it from there. One question that I would ask you is, you have traveled a lot. You have worked with many countries. We've been knowing each other already for quite some time, I would say. And you were one of the first people I met, actually, when I started working in the Estonian government agencies. So one question that I would have to you is exactly, if you take this more global landscape perspective, you know, what do you think that stands out in this European strategy for a digital Europe in 2030? Meaning, what are some of the approaches or the key points, very briefly, outlined in the report that in any case do apply also to digital transformation plans beyond Europe in other countries?
So this is, again, not just the race to competitiveness of Europe, but also connectedness of to the rest of the world as well. So, in order to make the world a better place for a citizen, but also for businesses, it's about opening up the world. The world is an oyster, let's say, yeah? So opening Europe up to the world in this digital space as well. So we see a lot of transatlantic agreements being scaled up in terms of how we can have much more collaboration in digital space. So, and you look at Africa, for example, we have Team Europe working very, very focused ways for many years already to build a stronger relationship with Africa, for example. So there's a 2030 strategy over there as well to enable Africa to interact with Europe much deeper and much more sophisticated ways that it has been done so far. So this is all about how we can actually travel easier between the two continents, how we can exchange goods, both physical goods but also digital services in cyberspace, how we can take down those barriers that we can actually harmonize the interaction between the citizens, businesses and governments between different continents or areas around the world. And if you look at, for example, in European and American, how we can actually enable, again, healthcare information for drug development, for example, or a social media information for better and more precise personal services for both businesses in Europe to offer services in Americas, but for Americas to offer services in Europe. And same thing, for example, in Africa's, but in Africa it's a little bit more in depth. So it's also about capacity building in the skill sets, and Europe is in a position to actually bring the experience and some of the funding to kind of boost this space as well of capacity building and developing the skill sets, and they perhaps boost the education system. But all in all, the idea is to actually help people in different areas across the world to collaborate and exchange ideas, exchange goods, and make more trade. And as a result of that, the whole world becomes more competitive, and with more open and competitive world, there are better ideas that are coming out from different parts of the world and making everybody's lives around the world better. So the grand idea is about this, but there's so much work that needs to be done, and these are just few mentionings. And it's also about making kind of a world more transparent and interoperable as well. Again, if you I've been working in Africa in a couple of places by now, and we're trying to make their business environment more transparent, more efficient, so they would actually be more attractive for global citizens to actually go there and interact with them, either living there or doing business there or investing there. So it's all about bringing the other parts of the world closer to Europe, or us as Europeans closer to them, so we can exchange whatever ideas or experiences, or just have more time and fun together. So it's so many layers there, all in all. Kind of a bringing the world together into the same open and transparent and more efficient and prosperous and progressive ways.
Yeah, and this is also definitely like a point that I can clearly remember that many ministries that I've happened to interview from countries in Africa or also like from other parts of the world. But I would have to say, like, probably specifically those that I spoke to in Africa, from Africa, in the past year, in 2023, many did point out exactly this thing, that the development of digital skills, for example, that could happen in their own country would allow their citizens to still be located where they are, but at the same time gain access to an actual global digital economy in that sense. Rado, you painted a beautiful picture with this last answer. So the only other question that really, really just like closes this episode to begin the year, let's say, is you painted a beautiful picture, as I said, but let's fast forward a little bit. Let's pretend that we're recording this episode in the beginning of 2030. Is that the Europe, what we talked about? Is that the Europe, let's say, that you would like to see around you if we were, let's say, in January 2030? Or is there something else, for example, that you would like to add to this personal approach, personal view, let's say, of how you would like a digital Europe to look like in 2030?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I've been dreaming of, because I've been grown up in this digital education space from ground up. I was doing programming in high school as well and stuff, and so I was dreaming about this kind of stuff that I was always wondering what is life like in Africa, how wonderful scenery I've seen on the TV there and so forth. But in 2030, I hope to have a small business as a side hustle, and I can do this direct kind of interaction from day one with some whatever citizen from African country or US or somewhere else immediately, without thinking of all the barriers that we have there today to actually onboard a short-time employee or a business partner transaction is being hijacked by some kind of customs board or some whatever massive bureaucratic institution. So I would like to. People are doing business with people, yeah? And then I would like to choose which person I would like to hire, partner up with, or sell my goods or buy goods from. And I would like to see no barriers between there. But today, imagine the barriers. You're gonna bury your thoughts already thinking about, oh, I want to sell some to someone in, I don't know, Papua New Guinea, and like I would like to see that world someday where there is no barriers, and if there are barriers, the rules are clear, transparent, and I can get it in a couple of minutes, and I know how to get around them, or what I have to pay to get around them. With whatever fees that are involved between the trade agreements. And so I would like to be in this world again, bringing the world together, and so people with people can interact more seamlessly.
Shout out to our listeners in Papua New Guinea because I know that they're there. I even met them in person at last year's e-governance conference. And right off to you instead. Thanks a lot for tuning in on this episode and joining me in the conversation.
It's been wonderful. Thank you, Federico, and Happy New Year to everyone again.
Exactly. Happy New Year to everyone again. Hopefully, you will also be faithful to this podcast exactly as you have been so far. And we're going to get even more people exactly to tune in and discover more about the future of digital governance. That's it also from your host. And just have a good one.
This podcast is brought to you by eGovernance Academy. Tune in on next Wednesday.